Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my 3 decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
The airplane lifted off normally. The engines were strong. The sky was clear. Nothing about this particular departure looked unusual. But inside the cockpit, something was already wrong. A checklist has been skipped. A procedure, one that pilots are trained to follow every single time, was bypassed. And in aviation, even the smallest deviation can start a chain reaction that nobody can stop. Pilots call it checklist written in blood. And I'm titling this podcast, episode 79, Standards Written in Blood. There may not be a second chance. On December 18th, 2025, a tragic accident claimed the life of NASCAR legend Greg Biffle. His wife, his daughter 14, his son 5, and a family friend, along with the co-pilot and pilot. Early reports indicated a discipline inside the cockpit was violated. Standards that weren't followed. This accident happened in Statesville, North Carolina, back in again in December 18th, 2025. I am sitting in Statesville, North Carolina. This accident happened from my home, maybe about 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now. Greg Biffle was an unbelievable person. He was a 50-time NASCAR winner, elected to the Hall of Fame in NASCAR in 2025. He was a personal pilot. The plane that crashed was actually his plane, but he was not authorized to fly it. It was a Cessna 500, twin engine. And this individual, Greg Biffle, flew his own helicopter to relieve the hurricane victims in 2024 in Northwest North Carolina. He evacuated people. He brought them supplies. I mean, this guy was like one of the best, okay? And a real humanitarian, great family, the whole thing. And he's gone. Why? Because standards were not followed. Simple standards. And if you're part of a lean transformation, I don't think I have to tell you the importance of standards. This is not just an aviation story. It's not a NASCAR story. It's about discipline. Standards, discipline. How many times have you violated a standard? Just this time, just this once, because we have a special circumstances that we have to like expedite and get this moving. And I'm going to skip that part right now. Okay. Now, maybe your product, if you make ballpoint pens, maybe it's not a life or death situation. But when you start looking at the attitude towards standards and whether or not we're willing to follow them, they could have devastating consequences, especially when it comes to safety. I don't care if you're running a hospital, and I'll talk about a hospital in a little bit. If you're running a factory, A financial services firm? Once standards are ignored, you run your business at your own peril. I mean, these standards are designed to protect people. And like in Greg Biffle and his family's case, you can't reverse this. It's done. He's gone. His family's gone. And there's no turning back on this, right? So let me give you a little bit of details on this whole Statesville Cessna 500 crash. So again, it happened on December 18th, 2025, only a couple of months ago. I'm recording this today on the 13th of March. So we're talking only, what, 3 months or so? The captain was a retired Delta airline captain. He had 17,000 safe hours under his belt. At age 65, the airlines make you, not the airlines, I believe it's the National Transportation Safety Board or the FAA, they make you retire at age 65. So a lot of these pilots leave the structure that's all around them from a safety perspective, qualified co-pilots, standards, redundancies, all that. And basically, they're charged with flying the airplane. That's it. When you're, working for an airline or even in the military. But when you go into flying private airplanes, or jets in this case, your role increases. You got a lot broader perspective here. Now, the captain was 67 years old. Again, a qualified, retired Delta pilot. His co-pilot was his 20-year-old son. And this is going to play really big into this particular crash. His son was a pilot. He was qualified on a single prop airplane, and he had about 175 hours of flying time. Now, you probably know this already, but pilots are qualified based on the aircraft that they fly. So if you're qualified on a 737 Boeing, you're not able to fly a 747 or a 777 or a 787 or an Airbus A320 because you're not qualified on that equipment. Now, some pilots are qualified on multiple pieces of equipment, okay? But that's how it works. So, on startup, there's a checklist. The checklist goes through all the things a pilot has to do to successfully get the aircraft ready to take off. Check this gauge, do this, start the engine, blah 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 blah, and all that. Big checklist. So what happened is engine number one, he tried to start it. There's two engines on this airplane, and it didn't start. So they have a procedure called cross bleed start, where you start the other engine, engine number two, and once that engine starts, it will generate electricity to drive the engine number one that didn't start. And they say that this is relatively common. Look, I'm not a pilot. I don't know if it's common. I've read that this is not too unusual to happen. Okay. But anyway, you got both engines started. The problem was that deviation got him off his checklist, his cadence of the checklist, and he missed a very important part. There is a switch on the airplane that moves the power off of battery power to generator power. Now, the generator is the engine. The engines provide the power to the aircraft. The battery is a backup. So he left it in battery power. Okay. So that one deviation of going to a crossbleed start when the first engine didn't start got him out of his cadence of following a standard. And he took off with battery power. So the aircraft took off. Mind you, you got an unqualified pilot. NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, has regulations that says that pilot in the co-pilot seat has to be qualified on that aircraft. This kid at 20 years old, he wasn't qualified on that aircraft. He never flew a jet in his life. And again, he was a pilot, but he was a pilot on a prop, a single prop, 175 hours. So they take off with battery power from Statesville Airport, again, about 5 miles from here, 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now. You gotta remember, NASCAR, if for those of you in a foreign land, NASCAR is our big racing. I mean, America has a couple key race, you know, racing type things. We have Indy 500, we have IndyCar, and we have NASCAR. Okay, where I'm sitting right now in Charlotte, North Carolina, is only about an hour from me. That's kind of the home of NASCAR, and Statesville, and all the surrounding towns I have here. All populated with all kinds of NASCAR. There's a museum. There's a Hall of Fame. There's all the garages that these NASCAR drivers have. Talk about 5S, you can eat off the floor. So I am in NASCAR Central right now, where I'm sitting, broadcasting from here today. So the plane takes off on battery power. It starts experiencing problems. The battery starts wearing down. And by the way, this is just a switch on the dashboard. Just a switch, okay? And it starts experiencing all kinds of problems. So the pilot decides to take it back to the airport, okay? Now, the events that happen next, again, not following procedure, were the demise, because this aircraft eventually crashed and killed all seven people aboard, pilot included, co-pilot included, okay? So they're starting to lose power. The instrument panels don't acting up. They couldn't get the landing gear down. And finally, Greg Biffle, who is an NASCAR driver in the passenger area, said, "Hey, what about the alternate power?" Now, this aircraft doesn't have an alternate power, but it does have the generator. And finally, they figured out, yeah, let's switch that on. But long story short, and I won't get into all the details that the NTSB found out, it was too late. They came in too low. Now, at the time, as the pilot is trying to diagnose the problem, he turned flying the aircraft over to his son, who never flew a jet in his life. The instrument panel was off. They came in too low. They end up hitting a light tower, and then eventually hit a bunch of trees and came into the runway, crash landing, immediate impact, blew up on impact, and everybody was killed instantly. Okay. So let's look at three or four things that were violated here. One, the checklist. The disruption of the first engine not starting, and when they had to go to, you know, the second engine and get that cross bleed start, they call it. Okay. That disrupted his focus on the checklist. Now, you can have a checklist, but do you have a visual indication on the checklist that every step was followed? Even if it is what it's called, a check. So I can look down that checklist and see, check, check, check. Oh, step 15 wasn't checked off. Why not? Okay. I've got a visual now. I can look at it instead of this long checklist with 30 items on it. And I have to remember now that each one was done. And if I get out of sequence, which happened here because of this engine failure, it didn't start. I got to remember to go back to the right step to make sure I go to step 15 and that's now on step 17 or 16. Okay. Simple visual management on a checklist where you can look down and say, are all my checks checked? Okay. Didn't happen. So they took off without the generator switch being on, and they took off on battery power. Second problem, another standard that was broken, unqualified co-pilot. His 20-year-old son there with no experience, no certification. And that's a direct violation of NTSB standards. Can't remember, the co-pilot is the guy that his job is to look for errors from an experienced pilot because they do make them, and to check and double check and make sure everything is exactly the way it needs to be. That's his job. Well, if you put an unqualified person there who doesn't know that protocol, how the heck is that going to work? That could have saved them if they had an experienced co-pilot in that seat rather than his 20-year-old son. That could have prevented this accident from happening. So another standard that was broken. So now you're looking at both of these and saying either one of them, could be the root cause, or not the root cause, but the main reason for failure, but it could have been prevented. Highly likely it could have been prevented. Third, he turned the flight controls over to the son while the pilot did. While the pilot is trying to diagnose the problem. Okay. The co-pilot in this situation should have declared an emergency. And because he was inexperienced, he didn't know to do that. If he declared an emergency, all the focus would have been on this airplane. The tower conceivably could have visually guided him in, saying, hey, you're too low, bring your altitude up 2,000 feet, whatever. Okay. Didn't happen. Another error. Okay. And again, for you people who look at, hey, the operator made an error and I got bad operators, but they weren't trained, they weren't qualified for the job you put them into. That's on you, not on the operator. Okay. That's on you. And that's what happened here. The other thing, the pilot could have aborted the flight, the takeoff, because he saw these abnormal indicators as he's going down the runway, trying to take off on battery power. Okay. He could have aborted this whole thing and figured out what was going on, but he didn't. Right. So those are four things right there. He came from Delta Airlines, which these pilots have redundancy. They have oversight. They have procedures. They've got that qualified co-pilot, double checking everything you do. He was now in a different element here. Okay. So. Does that have any kind of ramification for your business? Think about it. This is a clear case of seven people dying needlessly because simple standards were not followed. I don't know how many times I've been in the businesses where, they've got the banners of safety, quality, delivery, cost. Safety being number one. We'll never compromise safety. And then you walk through the facility and you just shake your head. Like, tear the poster down. Because the first people who know that's a bunch of crap are the employees. They know they're working in unsafe environments every day. And here you are as a leader putting up these posters saying, I really care about my people. Safety first. Safety is always first. And then we have a fatality. Okay. The attitude towards safety. Let me tell you two stories that I've faced over the years. One was a top safety director of a multi-billion-dollar company who told me they're not all that concerned with safety accidents that are not irreversible. So, in other words, if you cut your finger, okay, not a big deal. It will heal, their attitude was. If you lose your arm, that's irreversible. And those we record, those we really care about. Okay, I'm so glad you care about Mary or John losing their arm. Okay, that's a true story. That, I mean, I don't have to tell you, I don't think what's wrong with that attitude. But that's a true story. Another one, it was a big company, a multi-billion dollar company. I cannot tell you who it was. You would know them if I told you, of course. And I'm giving a lean boot camp to the CEO of this huge company and all of their direct reports, his direct reports. And one of the direct reports was the senior vice president of safety. Okay. So I got onto the subject of, safety, quality, delivery, cost, started talking about the philosophy of safety and why that's important and all that good stuff. And I asked, tell me about your safety, guys. I mean, how are you doing in that department? How do you measure it? How do you think about it? And the head safety guy said this to me. And I hope you're sitting down. We had a really good year this year. We only lost five people. Last year, we lost 12. Okay. Now, I had just lost my son in Afghanistan a couple years earlier. And I don't think that would have mattered, but it was very sensitive to me when he said that. So I looked at him and I said, "So you had a good year last year?" He goes, "Yeah, we only lost five people." Okay, I said, "Do you think the families of the five that you lost would share your opinion about what a great year you guys had?" I said that right in front of everybody because I was irate when he said that. And he got irate at me. He was upset at me for challenging him in that fashion. And I looked at him and said, "Look, pal, you got this all reversed. You lost five people last year. And you're sitting there saying it was a good year. You're marking yourself green. Your families are marking you red, a big red. It's a watermelon KPI, by the way. Green on the outside, red on the inside. And you're upset with me because I'm upset with you that you feel good about losing five people? I don't think we're on the same page, pal. I dropped that client in a heartbeat. I dropped him. It would have been a big client of mine, too. A big client. Okay. I'm done. I have no use for you. Sorry. When you have that kind of attitude for safety. We had a good year. We lost five people. We had a good year. We had a really good year. I guess it wasn't any of his relatives or friends or family. Okay. True story. I don't tell you. So when we look at safety standards, and there was a study done about infections in hospital stays, the United States, last data I looked at, and this is out of the CDC, out of the government, Center for Disease Control said that we lose about 100,000 people a year. They die. When I say lose, they die because of unrelated infections that they pick up in hospitals. And a lot of these infections have to do with injections, like, you know, intravenous or whatever. And a study that was done said that if we followed standard checklist procedures for cleanliness, sanitary, you know, they'd all be prevented. Wait, think about that. I went to the hospital one time for a procedure, and this guy comes in and he is going to give me an intravenous. And on the wall are gloves, large, medium, small, sitting there open to the elements. Anybody could have sneezed on those gloves, right? He takes the gloves with his bare hands and puts the gloves on. Okay. And then he starts doing his thing with the alcohol, very sanitary, right? He's got the alcohol and he's rubbing my arm and he's doing this. He's looking for a vein, takes out the syringe. And I said, I got a question for you. Before you proceed, I said, well, what are the gloves for? Oh, it's for sanitary. Is it to protect you or to protect me? Well, both, he says. Well, tell me, how exactly is it protecting me? Can I make an observation? First of all, did you wash your hands? Did you scrub your hands before you grab the gloves out of the box and then put the gloves on your hand? Well, no. I mean, no, he says. And the gloves are exposed to air. So if I came by and sneezed, would not my germs be on those gloves? I mean, I'm just trying to understand what you're doing. Is this like fake medical stuff that you're doing? Is this for show? I said, did you know that 100,000 people die every year because of unwanted, you know, unrelated infections? You're going for a knee replacement and you die from an infection, you know? Well, we don't really have that kind of problem here. So how do you know? How do you know you don't have that kind of problem? Somebody has a problem. I can't believe the medical community, I said to them, is losing 100,000 people a year because of this. And you, of all people, don't have the problem. How do you know? I said, if I get an infection and, you know, 5 days later, I'm up in a hospital room somewhere and I die, are you going to know about that? And you're going to know that it was you that caused it? I'm not trying to give you a hard time, okay? But I see all the stuff you're doing here, and it doesn't make sense to me. So what I'm trying to get at here is, now, that may be a case where they don't have procedures. They should, wouldn't you think they do? I mean, but that may be a case they don't have procedures. So that's the biggest problem. You don't have a procedure. If you have one and you're not following it, that's another matter. It's a different kind of problem, right? So all I'm getting at here is we set standards and we constantly break those standards. I was with a company in Europe and we started talking about all the problems they have with their new product development. They supposedly have standards. They actually said to me, well, yeah, when we got to get stuff done, we just got to blow away the standards because we don't have time to do those standards. Wouldn't you think, though, that the reason you have problems is because none of the standards are being followed throughout this process that you said you standardized? So, you know, violating on some standards, you might have bad quality, you might lose a customer, you might have high costs, you will have high costs. And that's all bad, right? But when you get down to a standard like safety, and I've been many companies that have unbelievable safety exposure. And then you get to this example when you're talking about a famed Hall of Fame NASCAR driver in his 50s, his wife and two kids gone because somebody thought we can just bypass the standard. Bring in an unqualified co-pilot, which could have made the difference. Not be diligent on that checklist. We got too lazy with it. Did you ever see when you are using, let's say, a piece of equipment like a, let's say you're cutting your bushes with an electric shear. When you first get that and you've never used it before, you're very careful. The chances of being injured by that are very low. But as you get used to the equipment, you start taking some liberties. You're not as cautious anymore. And this happened to me. I was cutting my bushes, and I had a lot of experience with this thing, this shearing, electric shear, okay? And what did I do? I put my hand out to brush some of the leaves away from the bush as my, as the cutting blade was coming closer to my finger, and it cut my finger. I almost cut my finger off. Bled like crazy. Needed I don't know how many stitches. Had to go to the hospital. Okay. I got comfortable with it. And the same thing happened with standards. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, we, you know, I know we got standards, but hey, look, we got to get product out. We got to get stuff done, man. And, you know, we'll skip that part right now. We're not going to do that over there. And I don't know if that was the case with this pilot. Okay. I'm not really sure. But I do know 7 people died because standards weren't followed. A number of standards weren't followed. The checklist, the co-pilot, the procedure for calling an emergency. Several standards were not followed and 7 people are dead. So it's frustrating when you see stuff like this. I just can't begin to tell you how many times I've seen this. And I think you probably have too. And all the lean, you know, zealots out there talk about respect for people. This is probably the biggest disrespect you can have, is when you have these standards that are designed to protect your people and you thumb your nose at it. Nah, not really important. We're going to get the product out. Yeah, just bypass that. Hey, Charlie, go ahead and do that. Go jump over that, you know, whatever. It's okay this time. I got you covered. You won't get a demerit. You won't get written up if you go do that, because we're going to get this product out. Customer's waiting. You see, this is where we're not walking the talk, okay? Do you have these issues in your company? Let me know. Mark@lean911.com. Shoot me a note. Let me know what's going on in your company. Episode 79, Standards Written in Blood. There may be no second chance. Stay lean, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.